You're listening to Life, the Universe, and Everything Else. Today on the show, The War on Christmas, 2012 edition.
Life, the Universe, and Everything Else is a program promoting secular humanism and scientific skepticism that is produced by the Winnipeg Skeptics and the humanists, atheists, and agnostics of Manitoba. You can email your questions, comments, or criticisms to us at lueepodcast@winnipegskeptics.com, or you can reach us on Twitter or Facebook at @lueepodcast.
Today on the show with me, I have Greg Christensen.
Hi.
And Mark Wattman.
Happy holidays.
And I'm your host, Ashlyn Noble. So last year, we had a great show. It was our sixth episode. We were a shiny, brand new podcast, and we talked about the War on Christmas. So we thought we would bring that back this year and talk about the 2012 edition of the War on Christmas. And to start us off, Greg is going to tell us about a little bit of the history of this fantastic battle.
This year, thanks to Fox News and their dedicated War on Christmas page, we can see it blow by blow. This year, it apparently started on November 19th with an article called The War on Christmas Begins. And it basically goes through, they've got pretty much an article a day. I'll just read a couple of the titles because they're probably clicking on all the links is going to be ridiculously time consuming and it's going to make me so mad. I'm going to punch my webcam or something. It's not going to be pretty. School replaces holiday concert with anti-bullying program. NBC denounces religious part of Christmas. I had to click on that one. Turns out one commenter said that she didn't particularly enjoy the religious part of Christmas. It wasn't the entire NBC network. UVA forces students to remove Christmas trees from dorms. That's actually interesting. I think I might read that one later. Navy cancels nativity after atheist complains. Survey, Christmas is about Jesus, not Santa. Another Festivus poll added to a nativity scene. Where was Jesus born? Americans fail basic Christmas quiz. That was kind of like an episode of, jaywalking? But that was from the Bill O'Reilly, the O'Reilly Factor. It was mildly humorous. Christmas concert canceled in Hawaii. Church cancels Charlie Brown over atheist outrage. Militant secularists lose battle to oust nativity scene. That's the one you may have heard where the static display is gone, but they just replaced it with live performers. That's in, I believe, Santa Monica. Let's see, a couple more Charlie Brown ones. Another article, maybe you want to review this one after the show, Ashlyn, I don't know. A gender-neutral Christmas? with a giant question mark behind it, you know, like, whatever. Christmas tree replaced with electric winter tree.
Yeah, and a lot of these I've been keeping up with on the Friendly Atheist, but they have a decidedly different spin on them than Fox News.
One of the ones that I find to be just patently absurd, U.S. Capitol Christmas tree pays homage to Obama, but not Jesus. When I couldn't resist clicking on that one. When you read the article and actually look at the picture of the Christmas tree, it is a 100% secular tree like most people have in their homes, except it has a very crude ornament on it, clearly made by someone probably age 6 or younger, that says, "I heart President Obama." And that, my friends, is a Christmas tree paying homage to our Messiah, Barack Hussein Obama.
I thought that with a title like that, it would have like little Obama head bobbles and like who knows what else.
It's so absurd. It's so absurd, but it's so highly funded. I mean, millions of dollars of Fox broadcasting time. I took a look at some of the stats. Some of the secular bloggers were actually counting up the time. You know, Fox spends, you know, on the average in a news cycle, 14 minutes combined on the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, 42 minutes on the war on Christmas.
Wow.
It's just unfathomable.
So the war on Christmas is at least three times as important as the actual wars going on, based on that.
Yep. That's good old...
What do you think, though, are some of the reasons why? Like, what is... I mean, Fox News is... I mean, anyone that's going to be watching this podcast is going to know that, you know, Fox News is essentially a big propaganda machine. So what do you think the objective is? Like, why are they riding this horse so much?
Well, it's probably to generate outrage against the, you know, liberals and liberal media. I'm not sure. It's kind of a bit of a segue, not really related to the war on Christmas, but it was kind of, as if we didn't know already, it was outed that Fox News is basically the media wing of the Republican Party. I'm not sure if any of you have heard of the recorded conversation that was leaked and got tragically no press about a recorded conversation between, I think, someone high up on Fox News, or perhaps a Republican strategist, trying to convince General Petraeus to run instead of Mitt Romney, promising, is it Roger Ailes that does Fox News? I better fact check that. In any event, the person talking to Petraeus indicated that they had basically Fox News's entire, you know, broadcast budget as their war chest, which is essentially unlimited funding. So, I mean, the illusion that they're, you know, a news network is, forget about it. Like, it's not even...
I think with something like Christmas, like, even people that aren't necessarily really Christians, I mean, Christmas is a fairly popular holiday. I mean, all you have to do is walk into a department store anytime between the 1st of November and the end of December, and it's pretty clear. I mean, Christmas is pretty popular. It's not like Christmas is going away anytime soon. If you were going to have a war on a holiday, Christmas probably wouldn't be a good one to start with. It's probably the most popular holiday.
It is slowly losing ground to when you measure its, what would you say, financial impact to Black Friday and now Cyber Monday, and I believe the Thursday as well. People are starting to go crazy because there's just not enough time to shop.
I just want to point out that Christmas is a fairly popular holiday. It might be the biggest understatement ever made on this show.
Well, if you're gonna make an understatement, go big or go home.
Well, what was
I mean, when you're talking about financial impacts, Black Friday and all of that stuff is powered by Christmas. It's people getting their Christmas presents, right? So we can't really say, oh, well, it's not as big of a financial impact these days because of these other events.
Oh, but good point.
From a propaganda point of view, though, I mean, putting atheists on the side of the Grinch, essentially, which is how they sort of like to portray it, and it's pretty much shooting at a paper target. Like most people, you know, if they take this sort of superficial level of understanding required to watch and understand to appreciate what they're, to believe what they're saying on Fox News, as far as a propaganda device, you know, painting liberals as Grinches, it's like shooting fish in a barrel for them. I think that's probably why they do it.
Oh, definitely. There's no question that it's a completely fabricated source of outrage.
Mm-hmm. John Stewart, in his, you know, as soon as Bill O'Reilly launched the first shot, as he does every year, because this is one of his, you know, fanciful creations, I guess Fox News's records from Manhattan, very close to where John Stewart is, I would imagine. Stewart said, look outside your window. It looks like Santa's balls exploded. You know, with all of the, like, and he panned across, and there's, of course, the Central Park holiday tree or Christmas tree or whatever you want to call it. Whatever, Christmas tree, I'm fine with it. And, like, all just ridiculous amounts of decorations. I mean, personally, Christmas has never really been about Christ for me.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but apparently John Stewart's take on the whole war on Christmas this year was pretty well received.
Yeah.
I grew up, personally, for me, I had a religious background growing up when I was a kid. And Greg, you're talking about Christmas not being about Jesus for you. And quite frankly, even when I was a Christian, when I was a kid, it wasn't really about that for me either. I mean, for me, it was about the family and the food and the presents and that sort of thing. And the secular aspects. And I think even probably if they were honest with themselves, the secular piece of it is probably what's most appealing to most Christians too, and most people that celebrate Christmas, as we talked about before, is as evidenced by, you know, the tinsel everywhere and the, you know, the decorations and the, you know, all the obvious, all the millions and zillions of dollars that get spent on Christmas.
Well, I grew up in a very religious home myself too, and Christmas, we weren't Catholic, but we did go to, we found whatever Christmas Eve celebration we could. Usually it was some sort of kids' play, and we might have to drive to, like, you know, two towns over to see it and whatnot. But, I mean, when it came down to, and, you know, I was in the Christmas plays myself at the church I was forced to go to. But when it came down to walking down the stairs on Christmas morning and having dinner with the family and seeing my brother come home from university and all of those things, nary a mention, you know. I mean, you open your presents, you start with a nice breakfast, and you go skidooing all day. All day.
Yeah, definitely.
Until you can't walk anymore. You know?
So last year on the show, everybody sort of went through and talked about our Christmas traditions, whether they were secular or religious growing up. My favorite was probably Jim's tradition of stealing a Christmas tree on Christmas Eve. This year I thought we would have everybody talk about their favorite Christmas memories.
I think I already blew that.
Well, my favorite is, as much as I enjoyed Christmas when I was a child, I've enjoyed Christmas much more as in the years since I've been a parent. It's more fun for me to watch my kids open gifts than it ever was for me being a kid and opening gifts myself.
It is quite fun. I'm not a parent, but I am an uncle to a whole hell of a lot of nieces and nephews, and it is just a lot of fun. It is seriously, I can hardly wait to get back to Manitoba. I'm counting the days until I can hop in the car and drive for 13 hours to get back and see them. Like, for me, it's 100% about spending time with the people you care about most, you know?
I always liked, my mom and dad would put our stockings out, and then we would have to wait until 8 o'clock to wake them up. So my brother and I would go into either my room or his room, and it would switch every year, and we would argue about whose turn it was. But anyway, so we would open our stockings, and then we could wake them up at 8 o'clock, and they would open their stockings, and then we had to wait for like an hour while my dad figured out how to set up the camera, because he would film every Christmas morning. And it took him forever to figure out how to set the camera up every year. So we would be sitting there just going, it doesn't matter, we don't have to film this one, let's just open presents every year. So we have a lot of videos of Christmas mornings just lying around that are never going to be watched. Actually, a few of them might have been stolen when the camera was, so maybe it's a good thing we have backups.
When I was young, I remember my biggest frustration at Christmas time is we would always ask, I mean, I know some people do this, but my brother and I would always ask if we could open up a present on Christmas Eve, and my parents never let us, but that never stopped us from asking. We would ask every year. And now that I'm a parent, my kids ask, and I say, no, wait till Christmas morning. So
we had to open one present, and it was always pajamas and a book, so that we would go to bed and stay in bed.
Oh, so they didn't just let you pick one at random from under the tree then?
No, it was always the same. There was a special one that had CE written on it for Christmas Eve.
Because that could backfire on you. If you just picked one at random, you could grab the batteries and you'd spend all night wondering what toy it was for. If you pull out the biggest gift, you know, in the night before, then you might not have as much to look forward to the next day.
Yeah, then the morning might be a little disappointing.
A little anticlimactic.
Well, I'm a I guess what you would call a first generation Canadian, in that my parents weren't born here. So we were a very European household, and our presents were mostly all on Christmas Eve.
Mm-hmm. Where are your parents from, Greg?
Denmark.
Which is probably one of the most atheist countries in the world. Is Christmas as big over there as it is over here?
I honestly wouldn't know.
Shoe thing? Is that a Denmark thing?
You know, we did almost nothing. In fact, one of my Christmas memories was reading about, I forget what, if it was from an encyclopedia or whatnot, but actually lobbying my parents, like Mark said, to open Christmas Eve presents. And I'm like, but it is our culture. And my dad's like, yeah, you're right. You know, it is. Yeah. And I won that one. I'm like, I can't believe this. I won. You know, but so the next day was, like I said, it was, you know, it was like a great sleep-in, great breakfast. You know, none of this 6 a.m. running downstairs crap. All the good stuff happened, you know, at like 12 p.m. the previous night, right? So you're, or 12 a.m., right? You know, so you get like stay up late and sleep in and skidooing and pancakes and bacon. Like, seriously, that's like a weekend on steroids.
It's always Christmas and Easter. Those are the days that we're allowed to eat chocolate before breakfast.
I saw a video recently from someone who posted a link to it, may have been Friendly Atheist, to Facebook about Pat Robertson basically comparing atheists with the Grinch and how, you know, this business about this war on Christmas and essentially, you know, atheists want to, we don't like Christians being happy, so we want to take away their holidays so that they can be as miserable as we are. And I don't think really, in the years since I've stopped believing in Christianity, I don't think the way that I've enjoyed Christmas has changed at all. I think I enjoy it just as much as I ever did.
Oh, we have an update. I'm not sure if this is a brand new article, but it when the page auto-refreshed on my Fox News here, I got a new article at the bottom of the page. UNICEF smears Santa as one percenter. You can't make this shit up. You seriously can't. It's what? How do you even? I'm speechless again. You know, like whatever.
Aside from Fox News, though, and their ridiculous take on the war of Christmas, I have seen sort of this general sentiment in, or I have heard people say things like, "Well, we're not allowed to say Merry Christmas anymore because we'll offend someone," or.
I don't know if it's
a sort of idea that we have to put the Christ back in Christmas, so that it's somehow offensive that it's offensive to Christians that if you wish them happy holidays or our season's greetings or something, as opposed to actually saying Merry Christmas. Have you guys had any experience with that sort of thing?
I think it's more about people being more inclusive. I mean, you don't assume. I think we're at the point where we can walk up to a person, you know, like you're a Walmart greeter or whatever, and you say, Merry Christmas. You know, I think it's now not safe to just blanket assume that they're a Christian. You know, they may be Jewish. They you know, and with the influx of immigrants to our country, there's all sorts of religious traditions, you know, religious or not or whatever. Cultures, and happy holidays is just simply being inclusive, and I think that more than anything is threatening to the old establishment, right? The new generation will always rise to take out the old establishment, and the old establishment will always, you know, resist and go away kicking and screaming. That's just kind of the way I see it.
I have a friend on Facebook who keeps posting these, you know, those share these images things that are like, if you tell me happy holidays, I'm going to reply with Merry Christmas because that's what the season is about. And then finally one day I just snapped and wrote this long diatribe about it's really nice that you, you know, don't care about being inclusive to all of your other friends and you just really want to impose your beliefs on them and blah, blah, blah. And it was, yeah, really ineffective, but made me feel better.
Well, I listened the other day. I listened to the episode 6 with the last year's War on Christmas episode. I know there was some discussion there about sort of where is Christ really the reason for Christmas, or was essentially were these traditions celebrated long before? I think pretty much it was agreed that sort of some of these traditions go back before. Before when Jesus would have lived if he in fact did. So I mean, Jem talked about Saturnalia and some of these other holidays that would have existed before, like some of the traditions like the tree and the Yule log and these sorts of things all predate and all have nothing to do. They have as much to do with Jesus as the Easter Bunny has to do with you know, Jesus' supposed resurrection. So, you know, I just wonder if it's not a matter of, you know, people just don't, Christians don't understand enough about the holiday to know that there's more. You know, it's not the slight that they seem to think it is with when people want to be, when to some people it's more than just Christmas, more than just about, you know, Jesus' supposed birthday.
Yeah, I mean, as has been said, humans have celebrated the solstices for millennia. It's not anything new. It's not anything that really has anything to do with Jesus. And it's going to keep happening. I really enjoy celebrating the solstice this year. Our apocalypse party will be on the solstice, so that'll be fun too. It'll be ending the world on the shortest day of the year. Or at least we'll be getting tipsy and dancing on the shortest day of the year, which is also fun. You should come. That might be a good segue into our The War on Christmas Antique Edition.
Oh, well, there's a cracked article, which I found.
Cracked, that bastion of the internet.
Oh, I love it. It's so great. It basically fueled, you know, the entire content of the Zombies episode. So a lot of rigorous science there. Anyways, they have a nice little article, 3 Ways the War on Christmas is Older Than You Think. Number 3. Teddy Roosevelt prohibits Christmas trees at the White House. Not quite sure why or how people reacted, but apparently he was a staunch environmentalist, and it was a clever ploy to defend trees. Interesting. I have no idea if that's got any basis in reality or not, but hey, the disclaimer is, it's crack. Number 2, fruitcake banned for being too good. Now this one, I don't know, maybe it's my anti-religious bias, but I can pretty much see this one being true. Fruitcakes were banned because they were sinfully rich. And this was, you know, back in the day when they would make it with honey and all sorts of stuff like that. And it apparently wasn't until the Victorian era that brought fruitcake and high tea back into fashion. Fruitcake is one of the things that I recognize it as a tradition, and it's great that there's fruitcake all over the place, but that thing is staying on the appetizer tray. I will be over here by the shrimp ring. Thank you very much.
And the Nanaimo bars.
Ah, yes. The Nanaimo bars. Excellent.
Most fruitcakes that I've seen are kind of like brick with maraschino cherries in it.
Exactly, yeah. They refer to that as bits of fruit that will last longer than us.
It's okay when it's more of like a pound cake texture.
I'm not sure. I've basically forgotten what it tastes like.
You're skeptical of that claim.
And number 1, Puritans condemned Christmas in the colonies for 22 years. A ban on Christmas in America. The Puritans, for all their hemming and hawing over religious freedom, were a touchy group. Colony leader Governor William Bradford, upon realizing that some pilgrims were taking the day off to celebrate Christmas, reprimanded them and instituted a fine of 5 shillings per mirth-making.
That's amazing! 5 shillings per mirth-making.
Yes. And that could be a joke. I'm not sure what that's all about. In any event, Christmas stirs up bad memories for the pilgrims. What Halloween is to little old ladies today, Christmas was to many people of England. And that's basically it. Those Puritans, they do not know how to have fun.
So the Founding Fathers, the Pilgrims, all of these symbols of America, very anti-Christmas. So really, the Republican stance should be Christmas bad.
You would think, when you have revisionist history, you can just write whatever you like.
Anything can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the piece about the revisionist history is that when people actually look into the history of Christmas, it wasn't always celebrated in our society, because people, you know, in history understood that a lot of these traditions were pagan traditions, and so it was, you know, it was seen as, you know, kind of like Santa Claus is today.
So it seems that, I mean, most of our, what we would recognize as Christmas, Santa Claus, Christmas trees, all of that kind of stuff, originates from Germany and the Netherlands, where more benign things that we might recognize today were replacing things prior to Christmas trees and Sinterklaas. There was a foul-mouthed bunny that lives in chimneys called Kriegerscheingenheit Zuckenbreit. They leave coal for bad children instead of rewarding good children with presents.
I'm really glad you had to pronounce that, not me.
I also just made that up. That's I was reading from The Onion again. So the first part was true. Yes, Christmas trees originated in the sometime before the 18th century, where they were decorated with edibles such as nuts and dates and apples and things. And in the 18th century, they switched over to candles. And I would assume in the 19th century, illuminated electrified bulbs.
Candles just sound dangerous.
On a dry tree, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it does. That's very, very dangerous. Today we find all sorts of ornaments like garland, tinsel, candy canes, which kind of reflects just the evolving nature of Christmas and Santa Claus and the whole thing. It changes over time.
Speaking of Christmas trees, are you two aware that there's actually a verse in the, or a couple of verses in the Bible that seem to actually, if you took them literally, seem to actually prohibit people from having Christmas trees? It's actually in the Bible. Are you aware of that?
I've heard of that. That's the basis for Jehovah's Witnesses not being too keen on celebrations of that sort. That would be a good...
The passage is actually Jeremiah. It's in the book of Jeremiah. Since I made the biggest understatement in the history of the show, I might be the first person to quote the Bible in the history of the show, too. But it's actually Jeremiah 10, chapter 10, verses 2 through 4. That says, "Thus saith the Lord, learn not the way of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the heathen are dismayed at them. For the customs of the people are in vain, for one cutteth a tree out of the forest, the work of the hands of the workmen, with the axe. They deck it with silver and with gold. They fasten it with nails and with hammers, that it move not."
See, that is amazing, because that may, in fact, I mean, obviously that's a verse constructed by, I'm not sure if it's the right word, but the orthodoxy, to try and stamp out the pagan traditions. And I mean, that's kind of the one thing that Christianity has really failed at. It is fully co-opting all of these pagan festivals.
Well, it's worth saying too, that if you're having a conversation with a Christian and thinks that Christmas actually started with Jesus, that this description of what sounds like a Christmas tree is actually in the Old Testament. So this custom of, you know, putting a tree in your house and decorating it with silver and gold, you know what? That predates Jesus, and it's actually mentioned in the Old Testament. So it just goes to show that this was a custom before the baby Jesus. The baby Jesus is the latecomer to Christmas, not the cause.
Oh, definitely. Oh. I mean, anyone that thinks that Christmas tradition started with Christianity is just willfully ignorant at this point.
And I mean, if you if ancient Jewish rabbis were writing about it, in the Old Testament, I mean, what comes before Jewish rabbis? You know, probably pagans and in the Roman Empire, you know, maybe Norse people, Vikings, all kinds of stuff like that. I mean, who knows how far this, you know, celebration goes back, right? I mean, it's been a very long, long time since we figured out that sundials and so forth, and shortest days of the year, longest days of the year, and, you know, we're all kind of witnessing nature kind of thing.
Here in the Northern Hemisphere, when the sun's going down at 4:30 in the afternoon, even if there was no such thing as Christmas, I'm pretty glad when it comes around, when I start to realize that, okay, the days are getting longer now, and there's more, it's just a happier time. There's more sunlight in the day. It's just nicer all the way around. It's not, nobody likes when the sun goes down, you know, it seems in the middle of the afternoon.
So one of the things that has really been central to this war on Christmas rhetoric that Fox News and similar places are promoting is the fact that atheists have been getting more vocal about fighting back about things like nativity scenes on public places like courthouses and in front of schools. It's also been happening with things like the statues that have the Ten Commandments on it. I think one of the best ways that people are going about this is by saying, well, sure, you can have your nativity scene on public property as long as you let us put up a display too. And so there have been things like the Tree of Reason, where people put books by Sagan and Dawkins and whoever else on a tree and put it out beside the nativity scene, where places have said, no, you guys can't put that up, but sure, we can have the nativity scene, then it's just going to lawsuits. And there are drawbacks and benefits to that. the drawbacks, obviously, that atheists get painted as these Grinches who just don't want Christmas to be happening, and, oh, we're just taking away your traditions of hundreds of years, and so on and so forth. But on the other hand, if we let tradition dictate what we do or don't do, or which laws we follow or don't follow, then that's setting a pretty shitty precedent.
Indeed.
As it happens, we actually have a short interview that Jeff Olson did with A.J. Johnson of the American Atheists on a similar topic, and we're going to play it for you now.
Hi, this is Jeff Olson at TAM again, and I'm doing an interview with A.J. Johnson from the American Atheists, who's going to tell us all about their organization and maybe a little about herself as well. Hi, A.J.
Hi there.
So tell me about American Atheists. How long has this organization existed, and what are its goals?
We've actually existed since 1963, which means we're celebrating our 50th anniversary next year. We generally advocate for the separation of church and state and civil liberties for non-believers.
So how big is your organization, like in terms of, well, not just raw membership, but in terms of its reach into American society and into the world?
I would like to say that it's massive, but we have about 4,000 members and contacts with 3 or 4 times that, so, you know, in 15,000 area. And we get on news fairly often. Dave Silverman, the president, has been on Fox News fairly often. He has an O'Reilly meme based on the tides go in, tides go out, that whole thing. So I think we are fairly pervasive in society, but we're always trying to do better.
So how long have you personally been involved with American Atheists?
I've been working for them in a volunteer capacity, started early last year, and I've only been working with them officially as the development director for about 11 months.
That's really cool. Okay, now, you must have a story of your own. Now, I don't know whether you came from a religious family or not, or I really have only just met you. Can you tell me just a little bit about how it is that you came through life to end up in a position where you're advocating for atheism, much like I do, in American society?
Sure. Well, I'm an African-American female, and when I was about 13 or 14, I discovered that I was also bisexual. And being African-American female and bisexual, looking at the Bible, it just didn't check out. You know, God really does hate fags, is what I say, and, you know, slaves and women and all of these things. So I really, instead of advocating for any one of those particular issues, decided to go for the nexus of where they all meet, which is attacking religion itself.
So you're actually an anti-theist?
I think that'd be fair, sure.
Wow, that's kind of cool. All right, now, you've been around for 50 years as an organization. You're nowhere near 50 years old. But that's pretty funny. So you've been around for 50 years as an organization. What achievements have you seen as an organization in American society, and what do you hope to see in the future?
Well, Madeleine Murray O'Hare was involved in part of the struggle to remove mandatory prayer from schools. So that was how we were founded back in the 60s. And since then, we've just tried to provide a community, meetings annually, conventions, trying to get atheism to be more mainstream. We are the group that does not pull punches. We call ourselves, in jest, the Marines of the Free Thought Movement. We are out there on the front lines on purpose because we think it's important. Not to say that other organizations that take a more, you know, soft stance are not equally important or even more important in some ways, but it is, as we know from other movements throughout time, important to have your bra burners, your kiss-ins, your sit-ins, and, you know, civil rights needs to have those people that are willing to be on the front line.
That's excellent. Now, obviously, you're talking to a Canadian here, and I do know a fair bit about American politics, but how does your movement find itself fitting in with the American political culture? Where do you find your allies? And I'm not talking about by name, but I'm, you know, more or less by structure or party or whatever the case would be. And where do you find yourselves fitting in?
Politically, we do have quite a lot of liberal folks in the movement. We also have a good amount of libertarians. There are a few conservatives as well. The Secular Coalition for America just hired a Republican, and we're excited to see Americans accept atheism in all of its forms and for everyone. It should not just be a liberal or libertarian thing not to believe in gods or gods.
Okay, that's excellent, actually. Now, the next question I have is, do you have lawyers involved, and do you have sort of a legal branch? You're a big organization. I'm thinking you must have.
We do. We do have a legal team, and right now one of our biggest cases is litigating to remove the World Trade Center cross, in quotes, from the World Trade Center Memorial and Museum in New York City.
And tell us just a little bit about that.
Sure. This cross was found in the rubble after 9/11 happened, and then it was moved to a church and blessed and, you know, considered to be kind of a religious shrine for people. And we were very much in support of that since it was in a church. When they removed it and used public funding to put it into the memorial, we decided that that was too far and that they either needed to provide us space and space with equal prominence to display a memorial for to represent the atheists that died there and the people that were doing humanitarian efforts that were non-believers, or they needed to take the cross out as well.
Okay, I get it. That's really cool. So really, where you drew the line was that separation of church and state.
That's right.
Okay. Now, there must be some humanitarian efforts that the American Atheists are involved in. You're such a big organization. Perhaps you could just knock off the names of a couple different things that have happened in your organization.
Well, we actually are explicitly not a charity. We're an activist organization. So we support lots of groups. So some of our affiliates, like Atheists Helping the Homeless and other things like that. So the local affiliates are more of the charities, and we, you know, align with them and provide them support. But as far as a national organization, we are an activist organization. We have a scholarship, and I think that's probably the best. It's called our Founder Scholarship, but it is also an activist scholarship. You have to write an essay to say what you're doing, but it's not an essay competition. It's a competition for activists.
Wow, that's really cool. You know, AJ, it was as one humanist to another. I must say it was a real pleasure to meet you, and thank you so much for coming to TAM and changing our culture.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
Well, there is definitely a pushback to some of the, I mean, if you've seen any of there's been a number of interviews that David, I don't know why, David Silverman must be a masochist, subjecting himself to being interviewed over and over and over again by Fox News. But, I mean, there is definitely some kind of pushback, I think, to that organization and to other ones like it. You know, Christians seem to sort of, you can't drive through the United States without seeing, you know, billboards about religion. But whenever American Atheists put up their billboards, they're constantly vandalized. And so, you know, it seems like there's this kind of pushback. I don't know if necessarily being confrontational is necessarily the best way to go, but I mean that's their approach. But their situation in the United States is a little bit different. But you have it's actually the Establishment Clause in the First Amendment to the Constitution. It says that Congress can make no law concerning, I don't remember the exact wording, but concerning the establishment of religion. So they basically can't, you know, they can't prefer one religion over another. So
we don't have that protection in Canada.
No, we don't have the. No, and actually, you know, our head of state is also the head of a church. So it's not, religion is not quite as established into our government as it is in, say, Great Britain. But it is at some point entrenched, in our laws. But I don't know. Have you been to the Manitoba Legislature? If you go in there, there's a inside the legislature. There's a statue of Moses with the Ten Commandments, right in the big room there, where they in the legislative assembly itself. Have you had a chance to be in there?
No, I've never seen that.
Okay, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I find that really that offensive. To me, it's. Obviously, I don't think that as some Christians would think. I don't think our laws are based on the Ten Commandments. Often hear people assert, but. It doesn't trouble me. I think the religious displays to me is kind of a things that the things that I'm more concerned about that religion do is more the stuff that infringes on the rights of other people. I can see why they do the things they do, why they have these lawsuits, but I don't know. To me, that wouldn't be the most effective use of their efforts.
Yeah, I think the main point is that when you have public buildings promoting Christianity as the one true religion of government, then it really excludes a lot of people.
Yeah.
And by starting with little things, we can work our way up.
Right, yeah. It's more the big things that I'm concerned about.
But it sets precedent as well.
Yeah, decorating... Decorations are not so much a big deal, but then when you said, our God says that, you can't, gay people can't get married because it's whatever, or, they try to interfere with you know, women's reproductive freedom, stuff like that. Then those are the, unfortunately, those are sometimes the conclusions of the, you know, the government endorsing or listening to what religion has to say.
Well, we have a clip that Greg has found for us from Bill O'Reilly to sort of close up the show.
There's been a war on Christmas. War on Christmas. The war on Christmas. There is a war on Christmas. You're anti-Christian. It was a war on Christmas. The war. 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 The war. War on Christmas. War. 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 The war. 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 Secular progressives don't want Christmas because that stands in the way of gay marriage, legalized drugs, euthanasia.
So you almost, you, I'm 50-50 on it. I want to hear Bill dig himself a deeper hole, and I also don't want to hear him say another word. That
yeah.
Last 4 or 5 seconds is just blah.
Sometimes I have so many questions, but I know I don't want the answers. But one of my main questions right now is, how does Christmas get in the way of gay marriage?
You tell me.
Because I intend to spend it with my girlfriend.
I think there's a mentality, you know, with Christians and you know, people like Bill O'Reilly that you know, it's basically it's all an agenda, right? The reason that sort of atheism and you know is hand in hand with the gay agenda, and where it's we're trying to subvert the truth of Christianity so that people will be more willing to accept, you know, gay marriage and these sorts of things.
It's just like he pulled out all of the, you know, liberalisms and decided Christmas is good and these are bad, so Christmas is versus this. Like, Christmas is getting in the way of euthanasia?
Yeah.
What?
I was sort of setting up a false dichotomy, right? Christmas is sort of on the side of everything that's good. And so by saying, hey, you know what, you should say Happy Holidays rather than Merry Christmas to include more people, well, clearly we're just on the path to wanting to euthanize people and use illegal drugs.
Yeah.
I think, well, basically, you can see right through it. It's a manufactured propaganda tool, the whole thing, manufactured by the O'Reilly Factor and Fox and the 24-hour news cycle. So Fox's primary, you know, objective and mission is to galvanize the Republican base, you know, and you know, stir up the frenzy and get, as Bill Maher calls him, President Blackenstein out of office. you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter if the argument is logical, coherent, truthful.
Clearly, those aren't things that Republicans care about.
Exactly. Like, just get the fervor up, get the mouth frothing, and, you know, move that political machine, that right-wing base, in one cohesive direction and accomplish your goal. You know, in non-election cycles, it could be passing giant, ridiculous tax cuts that break your economy. Maybe it's going to war to find weapons of mass destruction. Who knows? Whatever political aim they have, you know, in the crosshairs, this is how they do it.
Well, Fox, I mean, part of Fox News and sort of the right wing in the States, the way that they are successful and the thing that they're good at more than anything else is sticking to their message and getting their message out and setting the dialogue. By talking about these things over and over and over again. You know, it gets other people talking about it, and eventually it becomes what people are talking about. But sort of, whether it's something like the war on Christmas, or whether it's, you know, some of their ideas about taxation, or I mean, any other political issue, they manage to pull their opposition even to their side by setting the agenda all the time, by just repeating and repeating and repeating and repeating their talking points over and over and over again. Eventually people hear it enough times that just, you know, on some level they accept it as being true, because if it wasn't true, why would they keep talking about it so much?
Exactly.
Well, I think we've reached the same consensus as the panel last year did. War on Christmas, happening or not happening?
Depends on, I mean, well, we do, we are constrained in reality, so it is happening in certain people's heads. that's, I think, undeniable. Happening in reality, like the general mainstream, I think not. In fact, I just drove by last night, I think a 6-block-long, park-wide orgasm of light. Like in Calgary here on 14th Street. So if you're in Calgary and you happen to be listening to the show, go check it out. It's actually, it was quite pretty.
Orgasm of light.
Yeah, or should it be orgy of light? Let's go with orgy of light.
Okay. I'm going to leave both of them in.
Awesome. Cuz that's kind of what it was like. I mean, I was driving down the street, and like, you could definitely get in a car accident because there is so much going on in that park.
And Mark, happening or not happening?
It's not happening, and I think if, you know, if it were true that all atheists are all on the same page, we all have this, you know, like certain segments of the population seem to think, I'd like to suggest maybe we have a war on some other holidays. I'd like to have a war on New Year's, because I mean, every time I think about New Year's, it's just, I think about all the ideas that I've had for resolutions that I didn't live up to. So let's have a war on New Year's instead.
Okay. You organize that.
All right.
Well, we're all behind you.
Someone can bring cookies.
Yeah, we'll have it right after the AGM that we've been planning for 2 years.
Right.
One, I guess, final thought or whatnot. You know, I'm not a militant kind of... militant, what a crappy word, but I'm not one of the guys who makes a point of saying happy holidays to explicitly annoy people or whatnot. I will call it Christmas because it's been what people say to me and whatnot for my entire life. So, you know, I'll just keep saying it. But I mean, with me, when I say that word, it's one word. There's no Christ Mass. It is Christmas.
Definitely.
And sometimes it's really fun saying it with a lisp.
So, war on Christmas, probably not happening based on this very small sample size. Perhaps next year we'll have a few more people to weigh on the matter. So, from all of us at LUEE, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays!
You've been listening to Life, the Universe, and Everything Else. You can email your questions, comments, or criticisms to us at lueepodcast@winnipegskeptics.com, or you can reach us on Twitter or Facebook at /LUEEPodcast. Our music is produced by the very talented Ian the Young.